Well, welcome back, everybody, to another exciting week of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters, and today is, what is today? Today is November 19th, 2024. And I guess the last time we did a show, it was done on election day, and nobody knew the results. And forget exactly what I was saying to folks, other than the fact that I had a lucky situation, if you want to call it that, in that I wasn't a big fan of either candidate. So, sometimes, the best position you can be in where you like both candidates, so you don't really matter how it turns out, or maybe you don't like both candidates, in which case, what the hell is the difference anyway, right? So that was kind of the situation for me. So much as I disliked the man who was elected, I was watching it going like, oh, well, there you go. So, it's kind of nice to be in that position, unlike so many of my friends who are already suffering from Trump derangement syndrome, anyway, it was kind of interesting. So anyway, I don't want to obsess about this national stuff. I tend to be more of the local guy, but I think maybe just say a few things. One thing is that I think it peaked. I was getting so many fundraising emails from the Harris campaign, and I think it peaked at 15 per day, right? Which is amazing. And I guess they must have raised a lot of money, because they sure as hell spent a lot of money. What was it? Something like they spent a billion plus dollars on the presidential campaign. They were just sort of throwing money around like it was water, and it still managed to be in debt. So even though the election's all over, I'm still getting 2 to 3, sometimes more, fundraising messages from the Fight Fund, or whatever they're calling the latest fundraiser effort here. So, it continues. So anyway, I don't think anybody really knows how this is all going to really shake down. People fear the worst. I just think it's going to be weird, extraordinarily weird. And even bad things, sometimes good outcomes roll out of them. You never know. So I'm just going to watch and wait and see and whatever. I'm a little weirded out, like most everybody, at some of these cabinet picks. I won't necessarily go through them all here or anything like that. A lot of them are people I never heard of, but some of them are awfully just strange. I mean, perhaps the strangest of all is this fellow Matt Gaetz, who may be the one who doesn't make it through the process. But here's a guy who was basically ought to be criminally charged himself, is been selected to be the head law enforcer of the country. So I said, well, how upside down can you be? I mean, that's about as bad as it gets. And I think the Tulsi Gabbard, I mean, I'll keep an open mind, but here's a person who some people are already characterizing as a Russian asset. So we're going to put her in charge of what's her, the director of national intelligence. Bizarre, absolutely bizarre. I don't have any particularly strong opinions about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Maybe I believe his heart's probably in the right place, but I do disagree with him on a few things. But, it does seem like as long as you helped and was loyal to Mr. Trump, you're in a very, very good position. Again, I don't have any strong opinions about Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, but, at least he has some experience in the field. And so he's not just like, hiring Bugs Bunny to be head of the FBI. I mean, it's something. So I'm especially curious to see how the Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, if I got the name right, non-department, it's not really a department, but they're already calling it the Department of Government Efficiency, whether they actually come up with things that somehow attack the excesses of the federal bureaucracy, or as some people like to call it, the deep state, right? I don't know. As I say, this is not the outcome I would have ideally wanted. But it'll be interesting to sort of watch how it all plays out, and we'll see. We'll see. I think a lot of people in places like Cambridge have some concerns, and Somerville have some concerns about, cities like us, especially, who declared ourselves, I think Cambridge back in 1985 declared ourselves to be a sanctuary city and said we will not cooperate with federal officials when it comes to matters involving immigration or refugees, that I think people talk in terms of refugees back then. Now people say undocumented immigrants and whatever, but or just illegals, which I find to be a kind of a strange way to describe human beings. But hey, anyway, we'll see how that all plays out. Will Cambridge and Somerville? I mean, it's interesting. I think one of the people whose position is to be to address some of these things in the city of Somerville, when one of the Somerville city councilors actually said, "Well, I actually help people evade the immigration officials," and then the person right on right live on a Somerville City Council meeting says, "Shush, shush, shush! Don't say that. Whatever you do, don't say it. Mum's the word. Mum's the word. Whatever we do, we're going to do kind of quietly, and we're not going to speak about it." Which I thought, all right, it's not exactly my idea of transparency, but I guess in hard times you do what you do, right? So, will cities like I guess San Francisco is probably another such city. Or Cambridge or Somerville that declared themselves to be sanctuary cities. Is Tom Homan of the Border Czar already got a short list of cities he's going to spend extra special attention on to make sure that we get punished in the worst possible way? I hope not, but we'll see how it goes. I think I have some curiosity, I guess, bordering on concerns about how all of this federal stuff, which, and again, I don't usually pay that much attention to the federal stuff. I'm such a low, hyper local kind of character, but just how is it all going to play out in terms of things like house funding for housing, or not just funding? I mean, right now, I think places like Ridge Towers, there's a very disproportionate number of people who came from foreign countries, probably many of whom are not citizens. Will they all basically get the boot and told, "I'm sorry, you're not eligible for federally funded housing," and well, I suppose if that opens up a lot of vacancies, then maybe that addresses some of the other housing difficulties we have, because there'll be plenty of room to, if those places open up, or perhaps because the city of Cambridge tends to have a strong liberal tradition. Will there be then efforts to make up for lost federal dollars by tapping into our excess levy capacity and increasing local property taxes to basically make up for what might be lost from federal dollars? And this isn't just about immigration related things. I mean, the thing is that maybe we will be looked upon very poorly. And things like federal grants for transportation projects might start to dry up. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, and I imagine there's going to be at least some hardship. And Cambridge has always been actually very successful at grant writing and bringing in dollars. Even when we were reasonably flush with cash, we always managed to also get grant money. And it'll be interesting to see, how that changes in this new environment. So I don't really know exactly how it's going to go. One other fallout, and then I'll try to stop talking about this, is, one of the biggest problems, at least from my point of view, is this sort of failure to understand democracy, in that when you have a country that's 50 split kind of 50-50, you say Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal, progressive, whatever, democracy would suggest you really have to kind of get a snapshot of the whole picture and not just represent 50% of the country. But we don't usually do that. We usually stay in our, I'm in my camp, you're in your camp. And if we win with 50.1% of the vote, then we get to beat you to death. And if they get to, or if the shoe's on the other foot, they get to beat us to death, right? Which is it's a terrible read of democracy. But, we have this sort of division in the country where this group here doesn't even want to talk to that group, and this group doesn't want to talk to that group, And I found that kind of interesting, that even though that's a problem that should be resolved somehow, which is more of a social problem, I don't think it's something government can fix. It's something we got to fix. Nonetheless, the word comes out that a lot of people who were using social media in the form of Twitter have now decided, because that's associated with Elon Musk, and Musk is associated with Trump, that therefore we, how many people do I know, including well-known people and also personal friends, are putting up their like their last tweet, "I'm out of here, baby. I'm going to blue sky," because we all have to report to our respective silos now. So if you're a good progressive Democrat, you got to abandon Twitter and start blue skying it. And otherwise, so personally, I'm just Facebook and Twitter. I'm not changing because I don't care. To me, it's just a platform for whatever. And I've never minded listening to different points of view. In fact, I think it's essential to listen to different points of view. Anyway, it's going to be interesting. I think we had another little kerfuffle in Massachusetts where one of the kind of, I would argue, vulnerabilities in the Democrats nationally was they kind of obsessed on certain sort of identity politics. And Congressman Seth Moulton just made a statement, which I thought was relatively benign, but having to do with gender stuff. And he sort of got slammed. Some of his staff persons walked out. I heard they were organizing a march or a big rally up in Salem, Massachusetts to protest it or whatever. And I thought to myself, have we learned nothing? Have we learned nothing from the election results? And that maybe we ought to moderate a few of our positions, but instead, what happens? Somebody expresses some desire to moderate a position a little bit, and then they immediately try and kick him. I don't think they're going to kick him out of the party. Actually, I think Moulton's political stock just went up because people see him as actually, he's like the John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, where he just sort of says what he thinks, and people say, "Hey, all right, it's about time we heard a political person just say what he thinks." And you don't have to agree with him, but the thing is it's respectable to just be honest and as we say what you think. So anyway, maybe that's enough to obsess on national politics. So let's just bring it back a little bit to Cambridge a little bit here. So last night was a Cambridge City Council meeting, so November 18th meeting. I think I entitled it the post-apocalyptic gathering because I figured you probably had close to nine city councilors, still living in some form of shock because they somehow assumed that Kamala Harris was going to win the election, and it didn't even come close, honestly. Really, I mean, maybe it will in terms of popular vote, but by the way, I don't think California's finished counting their ballots, have they? They're really slow out there, anyway, but I just figured, everybody's going to be deranged or whatever. But I don't think there was even a mention of it at the council meeting. I think they were away. They were doing the National League of Cities meeting this actually just this past just a few days ago, really. So, so even some of the new counselors are sort of coming in with the new knowledge and, new perspectives, at least we hope. I mean, that's why you go to conferences, right? And we'll see. But there were a few particular things. Maybe I'll just sort of bounce around a little bit and take a look over here, just talk a little bit about this. So one of the things that was interesting at the council meeting was, not that I went through it all, I just skimmed it, but they have every year now. I think it used to be every 2 years, but now it's every year. They do this thing they call a resident satisfaction survey. And I don't think it's at all surprising that some of the things that actually I'm just going to step out of this one here. I just say it comes back and they say, what are the top priorities? What do you care most about? Where do you think the city's doing a good job? Where do you think it's doing a poor job? I think interestingly, I think the worst marks came for like how city addressing traffic, meaning if you want to drive across the city, I don't know a single person who thinks it's good to drive in Cambridge anymore, and including me, I think it's a nightmare, and it's only going to get worse, because of the wonderful initiatives of our lovely city council and the ordinances that they pass that are seem and the city staff endorse, which seem basically to be centered on desiring making as much obstruction to traffic as possible, because don't you know that's traffic coming, and everybody's going to be safer because you can't drive faster than 10 miles an hour without running into a concrete bollard next to a protected bike lane or whatever. And I think their theory is that by making life so damn miserable that everybody's going to somehow hop on a bike. And I don't think that's really true. In fact, I think even in the resident survey, I think they asked, when was the last time you were on a bike? And it's still most people aren't really using bikes and aren't going to be anytime soon. So I don't know. Maybe if you're an elected official and a representative, you are supposed to represent the people. And if people don't like the fact that it's getting kind of miserable, maybe you ought to at least pay some attention to that. But who knows? Not surprisingly, top issue is always housing and housing affordability. But as Paul Toner said at the council meeting last night, and I appreciated his bringing that up, he said, well, when you say affordable housing, what exactly do you mean? And the survey didn't seem to differentiate between affordable housing in the sense of subsidized housing provided by the government or a nonprofit, where you apply and if you're eligible, you get a great deal or whatever, versus what I personally think is what most people mean when they say affordable housing is their big issue. What they really mean is the rent's too damn high, right? Or else the ability, my dream of owning a home or a condo is becoming more and more remote because it's just the prices are just so ridiculously high. Where the rents are so ridiculously high. I mean, I keep very reasonable rents in my triple decker, but I'm always astonished when I hear, I was talking to a neighbor a half hour ago, and he saying some little crappy apartments across the street were going to $4,000 and $5,000 a month. I said, oh my God. So anyway, if somebody called me from the company that was doing the resident satisfaction survey, and they were asked about housing, say, how do you feel about housing? I think it's there. I would say the rent's too damn high. I would say the housing costs are too damn high. But I don't think that, it's sort of like if everybody got COVID, and people would say, what's the biggest issue? You'd say, well, we're all sick. But that doesn't necessarily translate into city policy. You weren't sick because of the city, you're sick because you were sick. Housing is expensive here, not because of city policies, because it just is. And in my opinion, every city policy that's been brought out to address housing affordability has been either neutral or actually caused the problem to get worse. Unless, of course, you're lucky enough to hit the lottery and get one of those subsidized deals, in which case, you lucked out. Because now the rest of us are subsidizing your life and what have you. But right now there's even a proposal for a massive upzoning in the city, all being sold under the rather dishonest category of ending exclusionary zoning. But it really is like tripling the heights and densities throughout all residential zones in the city. And there's groups out there saying, oh yeah, and that's going to bring housing costs down. Let me let you in on a little secret. It's not going to lower housing costs at all. All it's going to do is allow us to accommodate a few more pretty wealthy people, and but the costs are not going to go down. I assure you of that. So anyway, that's what we do. So anyway, mentioning this here only under the category of resident satisfaction survey, because that was on the council agenda and they were looking at that, and I dare say misinterpreting a lot of what it was actually saying. So be it, right? So see, what are some of the other things that were actually part of council agenda last night that I thought were interesting? Oh, one thing of significant import for me personally was that there were several appointments to various advisory committees. I think in particular there was let's see, there was a Cambridge Street something or other working group that basically is, was long in coming, but it was a group of, I believe, 15 people who were supposed to talk about, some of the particulars about things that are coming for Cambridge Street. But come on, let's be honest, right? It's all about putting in separated bike lanes And the only thing that this committee is not going to be given any ability to affect any of that, because don't you know that's part of the cycling safety ordinance and that's untouchable. So basically they're going to just the joke I always make is you're going to get to deliberate on the color of the flex posts, and that's pretty much it. Or maybe whether you should remove all the parking on this side or that side, you know. So anyway, so those appointments were made. Something of importance to me was the appointments for the Central Square Advisory Committee, you know, and I've been sort of, you know, dreading a little bit about that because I thought somebody would on the sort of political inside would try to make sure I was not on it. So sure enough, come Thursday night when I saw the agenda and it had the list of the people who were appointed, there were two new appointments, both of which seemed great. And then four reappointments of existing members, and my name was not on there. And I was outraged. So I contacted some city councilors and say, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I'm the most active member of the committee, quite honestly. And I'm not just saying that to toot my horn. And I think I do a pretty good job on it. So anyway, the word that came back officially was, oh, it was an oversight. And so they put my name on it. And there was an amended version of the communication from the city manager that was introduced during the meeting last night, that the only change of which was basically to put me in. Whether that was really just because of a little political pressure applied, possibly. Was it an oversight? You know, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but you know, there is a problem, a growing problem. I'll speak very directly about this. Of city departments, sometimes, not necessarily in this case, basically picking citizen advisory committees based upon the outcomes that they want. I will absolutely argue that the if you wanted to serve on a bicycle, the Cambridge Bike Committee, you pretty much had to agree with the staff person in charge who works within the community development department. Otherwise, you would just simply never get appointed. That is probably true with some of the other committees as well. You know, I do find it sort of ironic that in a city that is one of the few cities, really the only city in the country, where we elect local representatives using proportional representation, that in fact, though you might think that therefore citizen boards should also be proportionally representative of the people and the perspectives of the people in the city, that sometimes various committees are tilted toward one side or the other. It was a big concern of mine, actually, when there was a charter change that occurred, I think, with the 2021 election that permitted city council approval, required city council approval of many, not all, but most board and commission appointments. I thought, well, so if you have the argument I made at the time, and I'll still make now, is that if you have a bare majority of five people, and you decided that the only people you want to serve on the planning board or the board of zoning appeals are people who adhere to a particular point of view, and if not, then we don't even want you. So, you know, I worried that in fact you might have 100% of the planning board or the board of zoning appeal being of one particular point of view, and no other points of view would be particularly tolerated. I don't know that that's exactly how it's shaken out, but I would say, you know, just because I know a few of the people who do get appointed, I go, there seems to be a little bit of disproportionality, to be kind, that happens with some of these appointments. You know, it's, I mean, I don't know what the better alternative is. I mean, I don't think that city staff should be the ones necessarily having 95% of the control of who is appointed and who is not. And I'm also not really a big fan, quite honestly, of this notion that somehow the political players should privately talk to city manager in order to guarantee certain outcomes. Even though I have to admit, in this current situation, it kind of was necessary for me. because I've speaking very personally now, I've kind of defined a big portion of my life by basically serving on city boards, whether it's when we did the computerization of the elections, the Library 21 Committee, the Green Ribbon Open Space Committee, Envision Cambridge, Envision Cambridge Housing Working Group, Central Square Advisory Committee, and before that it was something called the Central Square Committee. And I kind of keep time in my life based on being involved in at least one of these. And right now, the only one I was doing was Central Square Advisory Committee. And honestly, if they took that away from me, I'd be really angry. So anyway, they also had the appointments for the Harvard Square Advisory Committee. So there was nothing particularly controversial about that. I think Councillor Zusi did raise the issue about how well advertised these various boards and commissions are. So, I think it was we had seven positions to fill for Central Square. There were only nine applicants. I don't know what that really says. I mean, maybe it's just not that interesting to some people. And I think it was a similar kind of ratio with there were 12 positions to be filled with the Harvard Square group and 13 applicants, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what to say, right? By the way, speaking of boards and commissions, maybe I'll just, well, maybe I'll hold off and come to that in a second. Let me just switch gears briefly, but I did want to say a few things about boards and commissions. Actually, maybe I'll bring it up. Actually, I mean, let's talk about the rain right now, and then it'll come back. All right. So one other thing that's of a great significance to all of us now, which is not a political issue, is the fact that it hasn't rained in ages. I mean, we love these beautiful days, but so what I have here pictured is a picture of the Hobbs Basin, basically also popularly known as the Cambridge Reservoir up at Winter Street in Waltham. This picture here is just under normal conditions. Now, if you actually from on the way, you'll actually see how the water levels are considerably lower, but more dramatically, this is more or less looking from the same position of the first picture. And you can see now you can there's an island out there in the basin, and you could just walk out to the island now. So it's the basin is considerably lower than it would be under normal circumstances. And I noticed, I think the Boston Globe picked up on a story, and they had a picture about the current drought and the fire hazards that are associated with it. I mean, there's been fires up at the Lynn Woods and elsewhere, and in New York City as well, all because of the lack of rain. So whether it's fire hazard or just, potential long-term threats to the water supply, it's kind of a big deal, and it has nothing to do with politics, really. At least in Cambridge, if the worst in the worst case scenario of the Hobbs Basin going all the way down, and that feeds into the Stony Brook Basin, and if that were to go all the way down, and then if they even started letting some of the Fresh Pond go down a little bit, which they don't usually like to do because they like to have a hydraulic pressure go away from the pond just in case there's contaminants. We ultimately have a backup plan, which is that we can go on to MWRA water. Not every other city and town has such that luxury, you know. So we are under drought conditions. So they're saying don't take long showers. My car is not getting washed right yet. It'll rain. I think it's supposed to rain Wednesday night into Thursday. So maybe I'll go out there and suds up the car and take advantage of Mother Nature to do the rinse. We'll see, But anyway, it's a big deal. So anyway, I'm going to take a momentary break here and then come back and talk about a few more things. So this is quite artificial, but here we go.